Welcome to Coach Life, where we talk to coaches from all sporting backgrounds. We discuss their coaching qualifications, their beliefs, their experiences, their players, the environment they set, and just their coaching life in general. Wow. Finally, it's been a long time coming, a lot of preparation, but I finally recorded the first episode with a guest. Very soon you'll hear David Edmondson. He's got 20 years experience in grassroots coaching. He is a coach and chairman at a grassroots club that he set up 6 years ago in Huddersfield. He currently coaches under nines, and I think he coaches an older age group, maybe under 12 or under 13. He used to coach differently to how he does now. Now he's all about the player. He prides himself in courses and learning, and he's got some very, very good views. So I hope you like this one. It's a good one. Right, cool. Dave, thanks for joining me.
No problem.
I saw on Twitter the other day you put a tweet out about Coach DNA. Talk to me about your Coach DNA.
Yeah, so I put a question out about if you were going to have a coach in DNA, what would be in it? I put a couple of points down from that would be in mine, and then I went off line, so to speak, and started writing down my own personal points. So I split it into planning and actually what you'd do at a session.
Yep.
So from a planning point of view, I had 5 points for planning. The first one was set problems that happen in the game for players to solve.
Mm-hmm.
Include all references from the opponent, space, teammates, direction.
Mm-hmm.
And then use video game design or gamification to create different levels of challenge and engagement. Make the activities adaptable to different numbers to allow for more or less players. And then have activities for individuals, small groups and teams.
Yeah, yeah.
And then in terms of actually at the session, there was 6 points for that. 70% ball rolling time, let them play and explore.
Mm-hmm.
Facilitate, let them swim but not drown, help when needed or when players want. Interventions, individual where possible to keep the game flowing. Group interventions in breaks between games. And affirmations, be specific with praise, what and why was it good?
Yeah, yeah, see, I'll pick you up on that last one there. Yeah, that's something I only really got to grips with this last year, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
I've been coaching all this time, and it's only when you step back and sort of evaluate yourself and you think, yeah, do you know what? I've been praising, and I've been handing out praise one too easily.
Yeah.
And just for a little, you know, just a little thing here and there. And also too, I've just been saying, you know, really, really good or unlucky or that was a great try. But what was a great try? What did you try and do? You know, so like you say, it's instead of praising, you know, me praising you for or just saying, well done, Dave, that was a really good try.
Yeah.
You know, like you say, an affirmation is, Dave, I liked how you saw Jack was through there and you tried to play the through ball to him. So then they actually know what coaching point you are liking, don't they?
Yeah, and it's important. I remember I used to coach a group and very similar. I'd just say like, oh, I love that.
Mm.
And after a while, even the lads were just laughing about it.
Yeah.
Because it sounded like an advert for a famous burger chain. And so, and it needs to be specific. But I think also for yourself as a coach, it's very easy to just say, that's great. Or that, like, you know, I like that.
It is.
It's also a test for you to put that affirmation together. I really like the, I like the way you, that you did, like you say, I like the way you saw the space and played that through ball. And it, you know, and that really worked. I always remember a coach, one of the teams that I coached, that we were playing indoors, we were playing five-a-side, and one of the players broke down the left wing, and he had a teammate who was on the right side of the penalty area, and he had another one who was right in the middle of the penalty area, and he could have squared it to the player in the middle of the penalty area, but if, but as it was unfolding, the goalkeeper kind of saw that pass.
Yeah.
And if you'd have played it, it was within reach of the goalkeeper. So he actually hit a much stronger pass to the far side of the penalty area, and his teammate put it in the net. And I was stood there with the coach, and I remember saying, I don't know if he saw that or if he tried to play it to the person in the middle and just got it wrong, and that's what happened. And that was one of the first times when I'd walked over to a player after doing youth modules and stuff like that and said, what did you see to make you make that pass? And he recited exactly what I saw. Well, if the goal, if I'd have played that one, the goalkeeper would have jumped on it. So I played that one.
Yeah, no, it's true. And like I did my level two. And funnily enough, we didn't really cover affirmation on there or anything like that. But one thing that I did take away, because you have the coach visits, don't you?
Yes.
And when my guy came out called Simon, he said a lot of coaches, I think we've all got it, to be honest. We all have, he calls it ticks.
Yeah.
stuff you say or stuff you do. And one of mine back, this was about 18 months ago, one of mine was, so say, for example, like you've just said, a guy's running down the right wing and he crosses it in, but it's just too high. And my initial reaction will be, oh, unlucky, Jaden. And Simon will be there with me and he'll go, no, it wasn't unlucky. It wasn't good enough. and I'll be like, whoa, okay. Yeah, I suppose you're actually right.
Yeah.
I suppose you're right. You know, and he said, I know we're dealing with under nines here, but don't just keep saying unlucky, because they'll then think, oh, Adam doesn't have very high expectations. And I was like, yeah, do you know what? I hadn't even thought of that.
I think that's a balancing act though, isn't it? Because like you say, with the kids being quite young, when I did my level 2 years ago, it was all very much the instant they made a mistake, you were expected to go in and coach and say, oh, no, that's wrong, and this is why, and blah, blah, blah. Mm. And then when I did the youth modules, it changed to, and there was the saying, once is a mistake, twice is a coincidence, and the third time you might step in.
Yeah.
And again, like your tutor's saying, he's right, it's not good enough, it's overhit.
Mm.
But if any winger or any player in a wide area, if they're hitting 7 out of 10 crosses into the player's feet or head or anything like that, then, you know, that's outstanding statistics.
Yeah.
So again, that's where, you know, like you say, you have that little bit of, you know, oh yeah, that's unlucky. I think the hardest thing to do and to practice is to try and find the right language. So again, with an affirmation, I've often wanted to go and say to somebody, that was great, and I loved what you did there, and you love what you did, and just tripped up over all the words, and just being like, I can't. Well, that was, and actually, I think sometimes, as well as coaches, we want to try and get the point out there and then, because you want that instant feedback. Mm. But sometimes there's nothing wrong with taking 5-10 seconds to get your words right, and then just have a drive-by intervention with that player.
Definitely. Or I mean, I would say the same sort of drive-bys. I like drive-bys in general anyway, but or even let the ball go out of play, let that player process what he's just done, and then like you say, go over there, or if it's in a game, maybe just pull him over to the side or her or whatever, and chat with them. I was just going to pull you up on
You just said something and I can't remember what it was now. Where you basically, when do you step in? So in your coaching DNA, I think on one of the points, I can't remember what one it was, you said about letting them explore, and then eventually, if you can see they're not getting it, then maybe I will have to come in and give a bit of advice. So how would you say you were doing, I don't know, say you were doing a passing drill, and I wasn't quite opening my body shape or whatever, how many chances would you give me? What scenario would you put me in? Or would you just step straight in and say, no, that's wrong? What sort of thing?
No, so the saying is one that I've stolen from Ben Bartlett at the FA, and his is let them swim, but don't let them drown. So say for example, you're doing a passing drill and somebody's body shape's wrong. One of my things, and like one of my other points on at the session, is to questions first to see if the players can solve the problem.
Yeah.
So I might say to you, I might ask you a question about what's going on behind you.
Yes.
And see, and if you say to me, I don't know, then my next question would be, right, when we practice again now, can you think of ways that you can see what's going on behind you?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I want to see whether or not you can solve that particular problem. And then if I've asked you those questions, and then another time I ask you and say another question and you still don't get it. So again, using the almost right once is just a mistake. Twice is a coincidence. And then third time is when I'd start to say to you, but what I would, one of the things I try to do now with players is ask them rather than just jump in. So yeah. I'll ask them, can you, you know, how could you do that? And they might give me an idea. And then I might say to them, I've got an idea. Is it all right if I share that with you? And then they can take their advice or my advice. So I did have a player once who were doing some 1v1s, and we were doing it where the defender's positioned at the side. So the ball gets played into the attacker, and you want the defender to curve their run and get in front of the attacker.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked the question, do you want to run in a diagonal line straight towards the player, or do you want to curve your run? And one of the players was adamant they wanted to run in a diagonal line. So yeah. Rather than me just say this is what I want you to do, my reaction was, well, try it. Let's see what works.
Yeah. And I think for coaches, that's a massive thing, because some people will look online or they'll do a course and they'll be told that they've got to ask more questions. But it's also the quality of your question, isn't it? Because yeah. I have found I've got assistants that have helped me, and I will, you know, I'm trying to sort of teach them while you're going and stuff, and sort of, you know, ask questions and whatnot. And when it's not their fault, but when they ask a question, there's two options, and the boys more often than not know what one is right.
Yeah.
So it's like it's a pointless question, and it's not, that's not good enough for me. So it's, I feel you've got to sometimes have an open question, haven't you?
Yeah, of course.
Like it just, what, you know, what could you have done better there, or what might have made that easier for you so you could see more of the pitch, sort of thing. But, you know, instead of just an A or B, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Sometimes. Even things like, one of the things that's really changed for me is, I would, when I first started out, I would be very much that it's all about us, all about my team, all about my players. Mm. How are you going to do this? How are you going to do that? When actually your game on a weekend, whatever game you're playing in, is actually dictated to you by your opponent. So depending on what they do. So actually, in my thought process now, I need players to be able to look around the pitch and see what their options are. And so one of the questions you might ask is, what's affecting you at the moment? What's affecting what you're going to do? And it might be, how the opposition are, where are your teammates? A great example was I had a team once and we went and we played an away game and the opposition pushed right up to the halfway line.
Mm-hmm.
And we scored quite a few goals by one of the players would play, one of the midfielders would play into the striker and make a run. And then the striker would come off his defender, receive it and play him through.
Yeah. Yeah,
and they'd score goals off it. And I remember saying to the players after the game, well, I would have liked us to play a little bit more football, but, you know, well done. And then I went away from that game. As I was in the car on the way home, I was thinking, I've got it totally wrong here. The boys have figured out what the opponents were doing and how to exploit it.
Yeah.
And so when we had our next training session, I actually said to the boys, you know what, I got that wrong at the weekend. You figured out what opportunities they'd given you to be able to score goals and you exploited it. And what was actually interesting was that the opposition players and coach as well, they didn't pick up on what we were doing and they didn't change anything that they were doing. And one of my things is I would like now, if I could take my under 19, for example, if I took them through to under 17s, for example, I would want my team to be, I would want to get to a point where my team is not my team. It's their team. And I'm literally the person who turns up and just asks questions.
You're literally the babysitter.
Yeah, exactly. So turn up and say, right, lads, what system are you going to play? We're going to play this. Right, and who's playing where? And who's starting and who's sub?
Yeah.
And they sort that out. At the moment, when I do half-time team talks with any team I coach, most of the time it will be questions and it'll be a set of questions. And the first one I always ask them is, what system are the opposition playing?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think if they don't pick up what's going on in their line or in between two units and something, then if you're not aware of it, how are you even looking at what's going on? So, for example, if you come up against a back three and you're playing a 4-4-2, you know that you've probably got 2v1 in wide areas,
mm-hmm.
naturally. But I want to see whether or not they pick up on that.
Yeah, see, that's interesting because maybe just looking at and evaluating my coaching, maybe I'm the opposite to that. I try to focus just on us and try and, because I coach under nines and I try to mentally get out of their head that the other team is a problem.
Yeah.
Can you see where I'm going with it? And because I've got a few boys who are a bit timid. They're massive on confidence. If they're feeling confident, they then play better. So in our talks, we just try and talk about us.
Yeah.
But inevitably, like you say, you do get them. You know, you get the kids saying, have we played these before? Yeah. This was 4-0 last time and stuff like that, don't you? So
they're
well aware of the opposition. And also the point you said before about your team working it out, you're right, because my side played this team who had an amazing centre-back. And we play 7-a-side. And they had worked out that he comes flying at you and slide tackles you. So they knew that going down the wings was a good option. And also, when he flies over to you, switch it.
Yeah.
And they'd worked that out. They had worked that out. And so it's you've got to trust them, haven't you, end of the day?
You have. I think under nines, you can focus on more of your talk on yourselves. But because as an under nine game, if you're watching a proper under nine game, there's not a lot of structure in the play.
No.
So you're not going to be saying to them, well, the opposition are playing this system and you know, how are you going to figure it out? However, you might talk to individuals about, like you said, with that, which player on their team's causing you a problem, and what is it they're doing? And then you can also turn that around into a positive and say, I always remember I went to a game once as a referee, was doing the game for us. And I think the lads were around about, it was one of my old teams, and they were about under 14s, under 15s. And the referee walked over at the start of the game just to have a chat with them. Qualified referee, proper league official. Mm. And he said to the lads, watch what your opposition do today, and anything that they do well, think about, can you do that and use it in the game? And I'll tell them to do the same about you.
Yeah.
And straight away, he had it, he put into the minds of the players that if somebody beats you, for example, goes whizzing past you, instead of being like, oh no, he's just gone past me, what's happened? I've actually like, wow, what's he done there? And how, yeah, you know, how to deal with that. And that's probably, of all the referees, and I've coached about 20 years now, of all the referees, he was the best pre-game because he set the tone of it being a positive day.
Yeah, and about learning.
Yeah, he set that all out, and there wasn't a single incident in that game of bad behaviour or anything. And all because he set that out it positively at the start and actually said. And I think the problem in junior football is we go to games and we pitched my team against your team.
Yeah, definitely.
And on the side, it's parent versus parent. I want my child to show you how good my child is against how bad your child is. Yeah, and actually, it shouldn't be like that. One of the things that surprised me was I read a, I think it was a tweet, but I can't remember what it was by now, about the word competition. Mm-hmm. And it says competition is actually about, if it was me against you, for example, is me and you playing against each other to test each other and help us be better. It's not actually about winning. It's about striving to help each other get better. So actually for competition at the youngest stage, instead of having games where it's 7-0, 8-0, 9-0 and nobody gets anything out of it, the team who's winning 7-0, 8-0, 9-0 should actually be talking to the opposition about a way that they could change the game to push their players.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. You do see too much of it. It is results driven.
It is hugely.
And it's so in your coach DNA, okay, I'll set a scenario for you. So if you had, you've got to think on your feet here a little bit. If you had, let's say, a parent and a kid, both, you know, so the parent and her kid or his kid, whatever, and they are massively results driven and a little bit selfish. And your coach DNA was, it's all about the team and it's about learning. How would you incorporate that player and parent into your coach DNA? And how would you try and get them to see the light?
Okay. For me, nobody wins a game on their own.
Mm.
So if you want to be results driven and you want things to happen for you in a game, none of that is going to work for you unless you work with the other members of your team.
Yeah.
Regardless of whether or not you pick the ball up. Lionel Messi can't do what he does unless the other 10 players in the Barcelona team do what they do.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, there's nothing, you can't argue about that at all. So what in my opinion, we want to try and do is push that parent and that child to being process driven. You want to score all these goals. You want to win these games. So what are the things that you need to happen to help you achieve that? Because there's a whole range of things that are going to happen that would help you get what you want. Now, if you only focus on what you want, then you're going to judge yourself just purely on a scoreline that you might have had no control over.
Well, and also, if that kid is just so selfish or self-driven, they're going to go through that door. And if they're not bringing their teammates with them, it's completely pointless, like you say, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
You know, it's a team game. They need him or her, and vice versa.
One of the things that I really liked, there was a book by a guy called Jed Davies that's called Revolution, the philosophy of Marcelo Bielsa.
Oh, yeah.
And in there, there's a section where he talks about Mark Sampson, who used to coach the England ladies.
Yep.
And what Mark Sampson used to do is he would have his game plan, and then he would break his game plan down by strikers, midfielders, and defenders. And what he'd do is he'd give them objectives. Instead of just saying, I want you to do this, that, and the other, he'd give them objectives. So he might say to, let's say, for example, Faye White, who's play up front for England, he might say to Faye White, I want you to make runs in behind and get onto through balls. Because you've got the pace to do it, for example. Yeah. But what he would then task them with doing is he would say to the team, say, for example, he was going to say, right, we're going to play 4-4-2. So Faye White and your strike partner, Faye, your job is to get onto through balls. The strike partner would have a different thing. So he would say to Faye and her strike partner, they would have a meeting, a forwards meeting. Right, can you two talk to each other about how you can help each other achieve your objectives? Those forwards would then have a meeting with the midfield and say, these are our objectives. This is what we're going to do, and this is what we need from you. And then the midfield would say, these are our objectives. This is what we need from you as forwards. And then they'd do the same with the defence. So he would take his game plan, he would feed it into the players, and then he would ask the players to bring it together.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
Depending on the age of the kids, you can do that, but you do it to a different, in a different way. So in my under nines, we all rotate round positions.
Yeah, definitely.
So one of the things you might say is, rather than saying, this is the objective for you today, you might say, right, lads, if whoever's playing striker today, what do we want our striker to try and do to help our team? And whoever's in midfield, what we're going to do? And if you think about it, if you had that, not loads of points, just maybe one or two points, if you had that on the little whiteboard at the side of the pitch, then when you've got one of your players who's off the pitch and you're saying, right, you're going to go on in midfield now, then you could say to him, have a little look at the board.
You said 70% ball rolling time.
Yeah.
Which I think is really good. How much of that is a game? How much of it is like a session? And how much, you know, do you have kids standing in lines, or are they all in playing, learning something?
This leads into a bigger discussion. So no, lines never.
Yeah.
Never lines. Hate them.
Yeah, same.
What we tend to do, and we only do this because of the circumstances that we find ourselves in. So we normally train on a 3G pitch. We have an hour. Say we start at 6 and finish at 7. If we, by the time I finish work, pick my little boy up, get down to training, I normally get there about 5 to 6.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously players are already turning up. We need to get set up.
It's a rush, isn't it?
Massive rush. So what we kind of fell into was the way we'd structure a session is the first 10 minutes would be a ball each at the feet. We'd do a few little tricks that we'd try and just learn just to help them with their coordination, really.
Yeah.
And then we'd normally play something like Bib Tig, but with a ball at your feet.
Oh, yeah.
Just as a game. And then what we'd do is, after that, the rest of the session is entirely games.
Yeah.
And what we would do is we would, we've tried a couple of different approaches. We've done it before where we set up four pitches and the players just move around the pitches like a carousel.
Yeah.
We've done it before where we've set up 1v1, 2v2, 3v3 pitches, and we've just played that all night. And then we've also done it where we've had like a 1v1, a 2v2, and a 5v5 pitch.
Yeah.
And we play that. What we do though is first 15 minutes will be the sort of the ball work, and then we'll go into games, and then the last 15 minutes of every session, what we do now is we give the kids free play. So we say to the kids, for the last 15 minutes, it's your session now. You can go and play 5v5, you can go and play 2v2, you can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
And we tend to find that a group of them will go and play 5v5, but you'll always find four or five of them will say, I want to go play 1v1, 2v2.
See, I'm surprised by that, if I'm honest, because as much as that you do pretty much what I do. we are very similar, but my boys and girls are similar to yours, as in mine just love a proper game, and the only time they'll do 1v1s and stuff is like when we say that's what we're doing today. I'm surprised that they actually choose that. That's good.
I think it comes down to how much involvement have you had in a game leading up to those 15 minutes. So if you've been playing and you're on a pitch that day with we've got a player that's very strong at tackling and dribbling and very powerful. Mm. And if you end up on a pitch with him, you might not touch the ball a lot. And that's not because he's doing anything wrong. He's doing what he's good at. And it might not be because you're doing anything wrong, because he is quite intimidating with how physical he is.
Yeah.
So we try and match him up sometimes, so he's with people who'll give him a bit of a challenge and will get involved in things. But if you've been on that pitch and then you're going to go to 5v5, you might be thinking, well, I haven't touched the ball much today. If I go play 1v1, I can massively be on the ball. Now, this has led to me and the guy who helps me out with coaching, we have actually withdrawn our under-19 from the local league from playing 7v7.
Ah, that was you, was it? Yes, yeah, I saw that. Because
we don't like it, because the players just aren't involved enough. Mm. So what we've done is we've come out of the league. We are going to have, on a Saturday morning, invite teams to come and play against us, and we'll have a little carousel. And what they'll do is they'll play 1v1 with goalkeepers. So it'll be like a game, but 1v1 plus goalkeepers and goals. Then they'll play 3v3, and then they'll play 5v5.
Do you think it will be difficult to find teams because most people are in a league? Or will there always be one team that hasn't got a game that week?
We've always found, or I've found personally from the last couple of seasons, there's always teams that don't have a game.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there's always teams asking for friendlies. The difficulty will be trying to get people to try something new.
Exactly. Yeah, because they want the bog standard win, go home, and we're here, don't they?
Exactly. So we spoke to the local county FA, and they're like, "Yeah, great, give it a go." And rather than set it up as a league, which would involve a whole load of paperwork and all various things, we're going to run it as a weekly gala, so to speak.
Mm.
One of the things we talked about with it is that we do still want to keep that element of competition of playing against other teams. We don't want to do it amongst ourselves, because otherwise it'll just look like an extension of training. So we want to get teams into players.
Yeah.
And one of the things we discussed is how could we do it where you could have a winner on the day, because you would have normally.
Yeah.
But how could we make it a bit different? So one thing we might do is, with the different pitches, we could give to players, when they're playing 1v1, for example, if you win your little 1v1 game, you could give you a token. Mm. And then again, if you win your 3v3, you can have a token. And you put your tokens in your team's box, and at the end of the day, whoever's got the most tokens...
Mm.
Wins. But what we were talking about is we could then have referees with tokens who could give extra tokens for things that aren't related to the score. So if somebody's been particularly good sportsman, you might give them a token. If they've used an unbelievable bit of skill, you might give them a good another token, so that you're promoting not just football skills, but other skills. But one of the things I'd really like to do, and it's something we're going to slowly try and feed in, is I want to use constraints. I want to use constraints to challenge people.
Yeah.
So my big constraint, and I would put this in junior football tomorrow, is I would say at any game that gets to 5-0 immediately becomes last goal wins.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because now, and then I would report all matches as 1-0 either way. So I would say,
yeah,
right, you get 5 goals up rather than using, because we've used the power play rule where you add a player to your team.
That's it. Yep.
And it doesn't work at all. Football gets more complicated the more players on the pitch.
And also, we've all had it. The coach's team is beating you 5-0, let's say. He is completely blinded to the power play because he's obsessing over getting that 6th goal. You have to then go over and ask him, could you put some players on? Have you heard about power play? Whereas, yeah, if that rule was in place, it would just wipe that out, wouldn't it?
Mm. Yeah, and it gives the incentive to the players to just play for the whole game.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter how many goals they score, because if you score the last one, you win.
Well, and it's funny you should say that, because at training, again, like you, we end with a match. And I'll look at the time and I think, Christ, nearly 7 o'clock, you know, oh, I'll give them another 30 seconds. And I will just say, next goal's worth 50. And they just go crazy. Yeah. They go crazy.
Exactly. We played our first ever mini soccer game. We went and played this team that was full of lads who were training at academies. And we got absolutely annihilated. And it was a horrible first experience for the kids.
Yeah.
And then a year later, the Junior League introduced a cup competition for the under nines. And because we've only got one team, they assume we're an A team. And we're not an A team. We're probably sort of the similar standard to B teams.
Yeah.
So we got put in the A team cup and we got this team again. So I spoke to the other team's coach and I said, look, this is probably going to be a waste of time, but I'll ask my players if they want to come and play. So we asked the boys, do you want to go and play? And they all said, yeah. So what we did is before the game kicked off, we said to the lads, look, it's a cup game. Whoever scores the most goals goes through. So, but we're going to play our own little game alongside that. And we're going to say, if we score the last goal, then in our eyes, we win.
Yeah.
So we were playing and we were getting heavily beaten. We get to the last 30 seconds of the game. Few chins are down on the floor. And we said to the boys, do you remember our game? And all of a sudden, all of those chins came off the floor. The goalkeeper rolls the ball out, one pass forwards, another pass forwards, and one lad shoots and hits the outside of the post. Nearly scores. Our conversation was not about how many goals we lost by. Our conversation was with a bunch of very excited young boys about how they nearly won the game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, yeah, that to me is more in line with the so-called development. I'd love to. We had a game once where the opposition coach actually said as well, and it was a brilliant idea. He said, we should be able to, in development games, we should be able to come along and we should be able to agree on some rules before the game. So I should be able to say to you, what's your team been working on? And you might say, we've been trying to win the ball back really quickly. So we'd say, right, I'll tell you what, whenever you lose the ball, as a referee, I'll count down 6 seconds. And if you win it back in 6 seconds, you can have a goal for it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you might say to me, what have you been working on? Well, we've been working on crossing. So you might say, do you know what, right, if you put a cross into the penalty area, and you score off it, you can have 3 goals for it.
Mm.
And then if you go and tell your team that my team's doing that, and I go and tell my team that your team's doing that, then we create a problem for them to solve.
Yeah,
so you know now, lads, this is what's going to happen. Now, even better than that, you don't tell your team what the opposition's doing. But then you shout out when they get points and you ask the players, can you figure out what they're getting points for?
Yeah, yeah. And it's funny going back to you. See what you're talking about there is where you've got two coaches who are on the same page, basically. And like with you taking your team out of the league, I have really debated that over the last 18 months, because 80% of the coaches and teams we come up against are in it for the wrong reasons. Yeah. And the 20, 30%, you know, whatever that I get on with, we do that. When we have a game at the end, we'll mix both of our teams up together so that it's working on the social side, and they play a mixed game against, you know, their teammates, their opponents, and they're all mixed up together.
Yeah.
And it just makes me think, wouldn't it be great to do what you've done and get, you know, a handful of other coaches think the same and come out of a league, create your own little friendly league and do stuff like that, do development stuff. But I don't know where
massively.
I don't know where you'd stand with insurance and whether you're allowed to. I don't know.
You are allowed to, because we could have gone down the road with County FA of we'll set a league up. Now, where we are in Huddersfield's one of the biggest junior leagues in Europe. Now, we'd have had to be careful because you don't want to upset people and things like that. So we'd have had to have had a discussion with them about it. Now, my thing is, whenever I have a discussion with somebody about football that I agree with them or I don't agree with them, is I don't own football. I don't own junior football, but I have an opinion on it.
Yeah.
And I know what I think is right and wrong. And I think the FA job for me and the County FA job is to support you with what you want to do. So unless you're proposing to do something that's not in the interests of the kids, and they say to you, look, that, you know, that's not right, then if you come to them with a different competition format or something that's a different experience, then really they should be looking to sort of facilitate that with you.
Yeah.
Kids need different experiences. It's like you read stuff around England. Years ago, the England youth teams, they cancelled all the tournaments that they'd normally go to, like the Victory Shield, where they'd play Scotland, Wales and Ireland. They came out of it. And it was a bit like, well, why are you doing that? And they said, well, if I get to a World Cup, I don't play against Scotland, Northern Ireland and Wales. That's not my group. I might get one of you. And then I might get Brazil and I might get Mexico. So they would start going to tournaments in America where they would play teams like Brazil, Mexico, USA, to do it. And their thought process, and where my thought process is going now, is that players make decisions based on previous experience.
Yeah.
If you walk off a diving board at a swimming pool and fall in the water, you know the next time you get on a diving board, if you walk forwards, you're going to fall in the water. That's how you make those decisions. You on a football pitch, when you first start playing, everything's new, and that's why players stand there and the game seems to go on around them, because they haven't experienced it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And so you need to offer that experience and all sorts of experiences. So, but where the player, for me, can focus and slowly build on it. So for me, my development model for my players now is, in the first instance, is on the ball. I need to help them to be able to be comfortable with the ball at the feet, so they can play confidently with their head up, and then they can start to be aware of their direct opponent. So the ball comes into me, and the person who comes to try and take the ball off me, I'm learning to deal with that first.
And it's so true, because I've seen it firsthand. Oh, we should pass more. Oh, we need to pass. And, you know, parents or other coaches that you see, and you think, well, hold on. I can see you've got players there that aren't even comfortable receiving a ball or with a ball at their feet. So how on earth do you think they're going to be able to receive a pass, then have the ability to play it while keeping it away from somebody? It's ball control and first touch, etc., is and ball at feet, like you say, is the most important thing.
Yet at under nines, we take them to a game, we play 7v7 and we put one ball between 14
exactly.
of them.
Exactly. Yeah, I know. It's this is why, now, mark my words, Norway and Sweden in 8 years' time, 5, 8, 10 years' time, will be one of the best in the world because they're playing 2v2 and 3v3 football. All their youth, pretty much, are playing that. Yeah. And I think they are going to be a bit like Belgium. Yeah, Belgium decided to do that, didn't they? They went to, I can't remember his name, Chris van der Haag or something.
Yeah, that's the one.
He decided to go to 2v2. And, yeah, they've had quite success with it, he says. So, yeah, I think they're one to watch. Let's put it that way.
Well, Germany are doing it now as well. They're introducing 3v3.
Are they?
As a format, yeah. I can't remember his name. There's a gentleman who's a doctor in something, and he's been studying it. Uh-huh. And they're going to introduce 3v3 into their formats. Mm. And then just before I came on the podcast, actually, I'd sent our idea to Paul McGuinness.
Yeah,
at the FA. And Paul's he's just replied about half an hour ago saying, yeah, brilliant.
Yeah.
And just asking to be kept informed as to how we get on with it.
I really wish, I mean, down here where I am, it's, I don't know if it's the same as you, it's five aside for under seven, under eight. And then when you go under nine, it's seven aside, under 10, seven aside. And then when you're under 11, I think it goes nine aside. So offsides.
Yeah.
And I seriously think it should be 3v3 all the way through until you are, I can't decide on the age, let's put it that way. I just think it's got so much involvement, hasn't it, 3v3?
Hugely. But Brazil is the biggest exporter of footballers in the world. Now,
I'm glad you said that.
I don't know exactly how they do it now, but my understanding is through starting to do my futsal badges with the FA, is that in Brazil, the kids in the foundation phase will pretty much only play futsal.
Yeah.
Now that's a 5v5 game.
Or on the street.
Exactly. Yeah, we want to. Yeah, we are saying we want technical players. We want this. We want that. And then, like you say, well, under 11s will put 18 of you on the pitch and you can have one ball.
Yeah, and you've probably got it. I've got players in my team that need maximum touches every training session and every game if they're going to get better. Because like you were saying about your guy who's very strong and athletic and dribbles through people, if you put a ball in the middle and you say to your weakest player and that guy, it's you against you, 1v1. He's winning every time. Yeah. That, you know, you almost need to take that away, like you've said you've been doing and, you know, manipulating it. But in games as well, 3v3, you could work it that your lesser player gets more touches. He's against the lesser team. I hate calling it lesser, but,
yeah,
you know, and it helps everybody develop, not just the result. It helps everyone develop, doesn't it?
It does, and when you first started playing football as a child, I don't think it was the idea of making an overlapping run that sent your heart skipping. I'm pretty sure it was having the ball at your feet and maybe scoring a goal. Yeah, what we do is we go, right, lads, you've had enough of doing that nonsense of scoring goal business.
Yeah.
We're going to go to one ball between 14, and by the way, you two can stand at the back and probably have no chance of scoring.
Exactly.
And that's happening. And then people go, well, his heart wasn't in it, was it?
I know.
Well, his heart was in it. You just ripped it out by taking away what it is as a kid he wanted to do.
And when some parents say to me, you know, about passing more, or, you know, my son is just this or whatever. And I say to them, do you want your son to be great with a football or do you always want him to give it to someone else to be great with the football? You know, so
yeah,
soon as he gets it, you're wanting him to kick it, smack it down the field. What about, you know, what about if he wants to run with it? Oh, well he's in our box. Oh, well, doesn't matter.
Exactly.
How's he going to get better?
How does he know that running with the ball in his own penalty area is dangerous unless he's tried it?
Yeah.
You know, now, all right, there's some activities you won't let kids do. Juggling knives is dangerous. You're not going to let nine-year-olds do it to find out. But dribbling in your own penalty area doesn't have that kind of outcome.
I know.
It might give the ball away 3-4 times and then... And then after that, think, yeah, do you know what? Maybe this isn't a good idea. And this is where it comes back to that.
Exactly.
Let them swim, but don't let them drown.
Yeah, definitely.
If he runs with it in the area 3-4 times, gives it away, and then starts running with it at appropriate times and playing and passing it if he needs to, then he's learning. If he keeps running with it every time in his own penalty area 30-40 times, then obviously as a coach, you've got to kind of start to say, you know, what did you see there? What made you think that that was an option? You know, and starting to get them to look around. Sometimes the ball gets to a kid's feet and the kid's that excited to get the ball. They don't look at what's going on around. They're just so excited to have the ball. And yeah, exactly. Who are we as coaches to say to them, you know, well, you need to give it to him over there. One of the best games we had this season, we played a team and we, before the game started, we made two of the players captain, one for each half. And we said to the captain, we're going to tell you which seven of you are playing. But you as the captain with your team, you sort out who's playing where. So they did that. And we did it. We'd rotate them on and off. And then we'd always tell them when they were going on, we'd always say to them, well, you go on here, you go on there. And then I said to the guy who helps me out, I said, look, let's try it. When we send them on in the second half, we're going to say to them that they just go and play. Don't care where you play. Just go and play.
Yeah.
So we got this first set of substitutes together and we said, right, when you go on now, just go and play. Yeah. And they were a bit like, well, where do you want us to play? Wherever you want. And the smile on those kids' faces.
Exactly.
And the freedom that came over them when they went on the pitch.
Yeah.
And they played great, but they played great because they were motivated. It was down to them. They had total autonomy over what was going on.
Yeah.
Total control. And we'd almost given them that permission. And what was sad is that even for us who's trying to be a bit different, is that we had to give them that permission. We should never have taken that permission off them.
No, exactly. I know. And in a previous sort of podcast where I've spoken myself, I've said that what I'm trialing at the moment, funnily enough, before lockdown happened, but what I'm trying is, instead of positions on match day, I'm having three sections on the pitch. So effectively a defensive midfield and attacking zone. And they can just float wherever they want. But the rules are we have to always have one player in each zone, which playing seven aside, you will anyway. And you can't stay in one zone for more than maybe 3 minutes. And so it just gets them constantly moving around, seeing different pictures from different angles of the pitch. And because you know, previously we might have had Josh as a defender and the only thing he sees is a pass from the goalkeeper and then he tries to play out and then the other team attacking face on to him. He doesn't see any other angles, does he?
No, nothing.
You know, it's whereas if you give them freedom, they can float into the defensive zone. Then they can, you know, think, well, I'm going to dribble out of there and I'm going to go up front and, as long as you've got one in each, I don't see a problem with it. They're experimenting.
Exactly. And it just gives them that freedom to go and try and do different things. And then once you can see that they're starting to play with their head up, then you can start to talk to them about what's going on near the ball. And then you can start to talk about, things like, you know, oh, well, you dribbled the ball there. Would it have been a good idea to share the ball? Was there someone near you you could have given the ball to? But then as a coach, also looking for behaviours that tell you that the player has that awareness. So for me, you know, a player is looking at what is going on around them when they start combining with teammates, or they make a movement that is a result of what a teammate has done. So if a teammate makes a run to receive a pass and drags a defender out of the way, and that player runs with the ball into the space that they've created, that's an interaction between players. And that's a player looking and seeing what's happening and reacting. And a class example of a player interacting with what's going on around them is a player plays a 1-2. So they pass it and they run to receive it back. A player that's not interacting with what's going on around them is just seeing the other player, is the player who passes it and stands still and watches the pass when he could have made a run to get it back. That's somebody whose awareness hasn't developed to think beyond just me and you as a relationship. And there, for me, they're the stages I would go through. I'd go with on the ball, all about you and the ball, to then what's going on near the ball and can you work with players near the ball, and then to away from the ball and can you start to see that if things are getting difficult where you are, can you move it to a different part of the pitch?
So in your philosophy, we've spoken a bit about some national teams, so, or cultures or whatever. So any cultures that you would bring into your coaching DNA? Because for me, it is German. I mean, I only coach under nines, but I'm looking to see them all the way through. So this, what I'm talking about now, I'm not implementing as much, but I will slowly as we go on. But for me, it's Germany, with just how organized and efficient and how they work for each other. Spain, with it doesn't matter what size you are, it's about your ability on the ball and your ball control and your movement. And Brazil, play for the fun of it, you know, Ronaldinho. Yeah. Play with a smile on your face, play street football, try things. You've nutmegged him once, go back and do it again, that sort of thing. So any nations or cultures that you take into your coaching?
There's a couple of things that have really influenced me. I was a huge football fan anyway, but when Pep's Barcelona came around, they totally mesmerised me with the football they played. And then I used to always love Brazil because of how they had so much flair. And then since lockdown, when the Bundesliga came back, I started watching RB Leipzig.
Yeah.
And I just love their full throttle football.
Yeah.
So they're kind of things that influenced my thinking. My big thing is I want them to be adaptable. So I would like them to be able to play eventually in different ways. So if they are playing a team who has a lot of the ball, they're able to defend and play on the counter-attack. If they play a team that wants to sit on the edge of their own area, they're able to have possession, be patient, and work their way through. Now, this is where, for me, I think sometimes, again, not with the youngest ones, but as we're getting older, we get the syllabus or what we're going to work on totally wrong. So say, for example, you want to work on switching play. I would have done this, and I've seen people do this. They split the pitch into the vertical thirds.
Yeah.
And they say to the team in possession, you've got to switch the ball from one wide area to the other wide area before you can score.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen on a match, though. Mm. The opposition don't say to you, if you switch it from there to there, we'll let you score.
Yeah.
Or you're automatically going to get in. It doesn't happen. Now, if you flip that around and you say to the defending team on the same pitch, if the ball's in the middle zone, you must defend all of you in the middle zone. And if the ball goes to the wide zone, you can defend in the wide zone and the middle zone.
Yeah.
And then you turn to your attacking team and say, go and solve the problem that the defence is setting. Mm. And you're trying to, you should, if you want to work on your attack, you should be conditioning your defence. And you should be conditioning your defence in to play a high press, a mid block, a low block, and training your team to say, what are the opposition going to do? And how are we going to deal with it?
Yes,
and then yeah. That goes from team down to small group down to individual level. Because if I'm the left winger and you're the right back, I should, as a coach, I should be helping you solve the problem of, is he bigger than me? Is he stronger than me? Is he quicker than me? Mm. Is he making me do things I don't want to do? So is he showing me down the line when I want to come inside and shoot? Is he showing me inside when I want to go down the line and cross? And then helping players to solve those problems. And I always say to my older teams when they go out on a pitch and when I've helped with open age teams, I say to them, the first 10 minutes of a game, you should be sussing out your direct opponent.
Yeah, yeah.
And you should be sussing out what are the opposition doing. If I play the ball left, what do the opposition do? If we play the ball right, what does the opposition do?
Yeah, see, even with... Now, I like game-based sessions, so everything is a game. So it is two goals, two teams competing against each other, trying to work each other out. And then you just put different scenarios or challenges in there. And funnily enough, I have done what you said. So the three vertical zones, yeah. I have done that, even with my under-9s, because they've got quite a good football brain. And... So we will start off and I'll say, right, 5 minutes and you have, yeah, we're playing. But beforehand, I've gone over and you make it all sort of like fun and, you know, oh, boys, I've got a secret mission for you. You're not allowed to tell them. So what I want, yeah. What I want you to do is any goals you score from out wide, your cross or shot is worth 5. Any goal in the middle is worth 1. And then I'll go down to the other team and I'll say to them, if you stop them scoring, if you defend the wings really well and they don't score for 5 minutes, you know, I'll give you, again, 5 goals or such and such. So they've both got a game plan. They think it's all really cool because it's secret and we're not telling you. And I say to them, after 10 minutes, I'm going to stop and I'm going to see if you knew what the other and could work out what the other team's game plan was. And they do struggle to work it out because, again, at under nines, they're still very ball watchy and, you know, run around, aren't they? But they, yeah. some of them do get it. Some of them are quite with it. And again, it's a game, but it's different challenges, or I might say, right, you don't concede a goal from this central zone. So when they've got it, don't let them shoot from here. Try and push them. I always say to them, try and push them off. Try and push them off for a throw. See if you can do that sort of thing. So it's for me, it's challenges and game scenarios, really.
Yeah, no, I'd 100% agree. One of the things that I've got into recently is video game design.
What's that? What's that?
Well, I've read the lady called Amy Price has been doing it with the FA. So it's basically using the principles of video game design to create games where there's various levels, but then also adding in things like pauses. Cheats and superpowers.
Oh, so actually, I'm with you. Yeah, so like video games, like PS4, Xbox.
Yeah, so for example, we played one, we did it once with the under-9s. And what we did was two teams, in the goal was a set of bibs, and every time you scored, whoever scored the goal put a bib on. Mm-hmm. And you had to get all of your players into bibs to get to the boss level.
Mm.
And then once you got to the boss level, you had to score three goals scored by three different players without the opposition scoring a goal between your three goals.
Yep, yep.
So that was the boss level. So then we offered them a superpower. So there was a bib, a different coloured bib on the floor in the pitch.
Yeah.
They could only pick the bib up if their team had the ball. And if they picked the bib up and they got the ball, they could run and everybody else had to walk.
Wow, yeah.
And then we did, they could pause the game and there was four C's that Amy uses. So there's cheat, where they can do various things like take a player off the other team or push themselves up a level. There's clue, where they can ask the coach for some help if they want some clues.
Mm-hmm.
There's challenge, where they can, if they feel the game's too easy, they can try and make it harder, or they can ask for a personal challenge if they want something to try. And then there's change, where they can change the game in some way. So they might change the size of the goal that the other team's shooting into.
That's really good.
And it just, it's a way of getting them to think. It's metacognition is the term that they use, and it's thinking about thinking. So trying to challenge them to think about what is going on in the game and how the game's changing all the time.
Yeah.
So another example I've seen was by the guys at the Magic Academy.
Yep.
And they did a session that I watched on YouTube, and they would give certain players certain abilities. So they were playing a rugby game, and to tackle somebody, you had to put two hands on them.
Yeah.
And then what they did was they gave one player on that, on one of the teams, the ability that if they touched with one hand, it was a tackle. And they would give them something. They might give them something to identify them. They might not. Now, if I'm playing against Liverpool, I know I don't want Virgil van Dijk anywhere near the ball.
Yeah.
Like you were saying earlier about your team dragging the good defender one way and playing the other.
Yeah, yeah.
So one of the things I've put in a game I've designed is that in that particular game, the superpower will be that if you tag somebody, they have to give you the ball as opposed to you tackle them. Mm-hmm. So you'd have to have picked the bib up off the floor and then tag them. So the players who have got the ball will have to look around for that player to make sure they're not near. So now, without directly coaching it, I'm hoping that I'll start to get some scanning.
I was just going to say, you're going to get scanning, aren't you? Yeah. Yeah.
And it's those kind of things. So like, implicit and explicit learning,
and that is the epitome of modern coaching now for me. It's gone are the days that I call it the army style of stop, stand still, shout at them, tell them what you want. That is coaching, but by setting up the session and setting the challenges and the situation, you've done all you need to do.
Exactly. And then you just question, like we said earlier, you just question around it.
Yeah.
If a player got tagged by that player and lost the ball, you could talk to him about it later on and said, oh, he tagged you there, didn't he? Did you see him? No. What could you do that might help you see him next time?
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
now another,
off you go.
Another thing, now when we're playing games, because that's what I like to do, and I've had cones behind my back, and I've said, sorry, not cones, flat discs. So quite hard to see. You know, they're not very big, these ones. And I've had them behind my back. And while the game is going on, I've got two different colours for two different teams, me and my assistant. Yeah. And while the game's going on, we'll just drop one every now and then. And, you know, so you're looking for players to see how aware are they, which team is going to pick them up first. And then they've got the challenge at the end of the game. You add up the goals, but also you add up how many discs they got. And we have a rule that whoever has just picked a disc up from your team cannot then pick one up. Someone else has to. So, because you know what it's like. You get, again, they're quite clever. They'll just designate someone to just go and pick the cones up, go and pick the flat discs up. So,
yeah.
it just helps a little bit with their scanning and perception, just looking around. But we only do that for 5 minutes, just to get some switched on.
Yeah, hugely. I mean, I went to a CPD event with a guy called Junior Roberti, and it was a futsal session, and he did a game where people had like a handkerchief in the hand that was different colours.
Right.
And when you were in possession, you had to drop your handkerchief on the floor. But when you were out of possession, you couldn't tackle until you'd picked one up.
Oh, blimey. Yeah.
So the minute they lost the ball, they had to scan the field.
Yeah.
To find the handkerchief. Now, if you think about that on a match day, the minute you lose the ball, if you scan the field to see what's going on and pick up threats and things like that. But it was such a simple way. And then he played another one and he did it very similar. And they just all had a balloon. And they'd run around with the balloon. But when the ball came to you, you had to throw your balloon in the air.
Yeah.
And you couldn't catch your balloon until you'd got rid of the ball. So if you went on a run, you'd carry on and then you'd have to go and find your balloon.
Yeah.
But it was just a simple way of getting you to look around the pitch. And for kids, little things like that is great. But again, it's something different, and the coaches don't want to do it because they don't feel it's not the proper game. That
exactly.
It's a fun way of introducing something that will help.
So, a bit conscious of time, but we've spoken about national teams. What teams, like club teams? Obviously, you said Barca, Leipzig, and I can't remember the other one. Did you say someone else, or was it just Barca?
Barca and Leipzig.
Yeah. Is there anyone else that sort of ticked your boxes with your coaching DNA? Because obviously you've got Ajax, who have a clear club and coach sort of DNA, don't they?
As
in what they do and how they produce players and how they play. And I saw you put on Twitter as well when you were talking about the coach DNA, or you said how many clubs have a DNA, and again Red Bull Leipzig, but also all of the Red Bull clubs. I saw you put a bit different. Their club DNA is sort of they've got really good recruitment, haven't they? And
yeah,
really good sort of young player knowledge, and then they sell for profits.
Well, what's interesting with Leipzig is that they won't sign anybody over 25.
Yeah.
So like you say, they bring them in, they develop them, and then they move them on. But they also do that because they have a very specific way of playing, and they feel that younger players will be more open to playing their style of football than an established pro who's played various ways during that time. Now, my personal influence is turning more towards managers. I'm a huge admirer of Pep. So I've watched Barca, Bayern, City. I've been fortunate to go and watch him take training a couple of times whilst he's been at City.
Yeah.
And then Maurizio Sarri was really excited when he came to Chelsea.
Yeah, disappointed a little bit. He wasn't given long enough, was he, really? But
he wasn't, no. And the fans were not... The media got on his style of play, and so the fans bought into what the media said and so on. And then now I'm taking a bit of an interest in Nagelsmann at Leipzig.
Yeah.
As to what he does and sort of keeping an eye on...
For me, on him. For me, I'm exactly the same coaches as you. I love them, but one for me, and I don't know how much longer he's going to be around coaching, is Bielsa.
Yes, huge.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah.
I watched Leeds. I think it was this season, Leeds v Arsenal in the FA Cup or whatever cup it was.
Yeah.
And they just blew me away. I knew they were good because I'd watched them before, but against Arsenal. And I just thought, he's got players here who finished 16th, and he I watched the documentary on Amazon Prime, and he was like, no, I don't really need signings. I think you've got all right players here. I'm gonna get them to my level.
Yeah,
and you just think, oh my god. Again, it's not about the buying; it's about what you're coaching and what the players are doing, isn't it?
But he works on them,
yeah.
Individually. It's like going back to talking about on the ball, near the ball, away from the ball. He will give the player the time they need and and look at what they're good at and what they're not good at. Mm. And he's incredibly thorough.
Oh god, yeah.
He watches so many games and things like that. That there, but yeah, Marcelo Bielsa is somebody that I have a big admiration of. And one of the things I'm disappointed with, as I only live in Huddersfield, I haven't got across to Elland Road because you can't get a ticket to go and watch them live.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen them. The only time I've seen them live is I do go and watch Huddersfield. I'm not a Huddersfield fan. I'm a Middlesbrough fan, but. My wife and her family are Huddersfield fans, so I have a season ticket there, and I take my son. So when they played Leeds this year, I was really looking forward to it, and Leeds didn't disappoint that day.
They won
2-0, but their movement and their rotation was unbelievable.
Pep is good, but even Pep says about Bielsa, doesn't he? And I'm blown away when I watch them. It's just like you say, the movement. Centre back will receive, it'll drive straight into the space, other centre back will move over or whatever. It's just so fluid, isn't it?
And it's all about breaking lines. It's all about, are we going to stretch that line? Are we going to stretch it widthways?
Yeah.
Are we going to try and pull players out? And they're always doing something to every line of your team. So that you can't just sit there in a block, because they're going to affect somebody somewhere.
I just think it must be, I said to someone I know, it just playing them must feel like you're in a hornet's nest, just buzzing around you everywhere. It's good to see really, because if he can do that with Leeds, what could he do if he went to a big club in the Premier League? I mean, God.
Well, there's a rumour that if Leeds go up, they may get some significant investment. So if that happened, it'd be interesting to see what he did.
Cool, wouldn't it, just? No, I hope they go up. It's looking like they will. And I think we could be in for a good time with him up there.
Yeah, I think it'd be really good.
Yeah.
Really good.
Right. Well, I mean, I don't know how long we've been. We've been over an hour, definitely.
Definitely.
I'll always finish on some questions. So I sent to you about coming up with either your super athlete or your five-a-side team with a manager.
Yeah.
That five-a-side team can be actors, singers, superheroes. It can be football players or whatever. So what have you come up with?
Mine's a five-a-side team, and mine is all footballers. Football is my main thing. So you'll be able to see the influence in this. So in goals, Edison.
Oh, yep.
And then in front of him, I'd have a diamond. Busquets at the back.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin De Bruyne.
Yeah.
Paul Gascoigne.
Oh, right.
And then up front, Lionel Messi.
Cool, blimey.
And then, of course, the manager would be Pep.
Would be Pep, yeah. Yeah, blimey. There you go.
But, yeah, all players that over the years I've really enjoyed watching play football. Gascoigne was always a hero of mine for England, but as a Middlesbrough fan, he came to Middlesbrough. And I remember watching a game where we played West Ham at home, and for 30 minutes of the game, he was just simply sensational. He just ran every pass he made, every run he made was just, I've never seen anybody dominate a game for half an hour like he did.
He was very good when he came to you, I must admit. He was.
Yeah. I mean, he wasn't without his issues elsewhere, but for Middlesbrough, he did a decent job. And then I watch Kevin De Bruyne now, and he's just, the different ways he can strike a ball.
Oh, I know.
And just put it in different places, just unbelievable.
With Gascoigne, have you watched his documentary? I think it's on Netflix. or Amazon?
Yes, I watched it a while ago.
That's very good.
It's very interesting. Gives you real insight into how he's the character he is.
Yeah, it does. It does. And not going into it too much, but where his best friend got hit by a car or whatever, and and I think that shaped him into who he was. Really, really do.
100%. And I think for anybody who's a coach, if they haven't seen that and they want to sort of get an idea as to how outside influences affect a person,
yeah,
watch that, because it's all outside influence.
It was. And your other Busquets, to the untrained eye, he's boring, isn't he?
Yeah.
He does the simple stuff well, but he's like the engine in a car. If you don't have that, you won't, Pep wouldn't have been successful or whatever. You know, he's so simple, but what he does it so well.
Well, it's like Johan Cruyff always said, isn't it? The hardest thing to do is to play simple football.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, like you say, he puts fires out everywhere. If they're in trouble, he goes and gets it and moves it to somewhere where they're not in trouble.
Yeah.
Just like you say, what people think is a simple thing, but it's just not. He's got such a vision and just being in the right place. And I think when his time is up, Barcelona will struggle to replace him.
Yeah, they will. They will. They've got... They haven't got as many youth players coming through. They've got, I can't say his name very well, Ricky Puig or whatever his name is. He's a little Spanish guy, but he's a bit more of an Iniesta. But yeah, you've got Oriol Busquets, his brother, but
yes,
I don't think he's as good. I don't think it would be as good as his brother. But no, that's a good team. That is a good team.
Yeah, I'd pay to watch them.
Sure, just a bit. Yeah, you wouldn't want to play them down the park though. No way.
I wouldn't want to play five-a-side against them. I don't think I'd touch the ball.
God, Jesus, no.
Well,
right.
maybe every time I kicked off after they'd scored.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Dave, for coming on. It's
no problem.
It's been really
thanks
good.
Thanks for having me.
You've got some really good views. Really good views.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm just trying to do things a bit different and try and make it more of the players' experience and give them some ownership, really.
Well, yeah, that's if there's anything I've learnt from speaking to you, you're trying to do it right. Everybody knows what's the right way, and you're doing it the right way. So I just wish a few more people would.
Well, hopefully, if we get it working,
I hope so.
We can start to draw some people in.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you very much.
No problem. Thanks very much for the invite. It's been good.
Speak to you soon. Thank you.
Speak to you soon.
Bye.
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 Thank you for listening to our podcast. We are on Twitter, so please give us a share, give us a like, give us a follow. @_coachlife, and me, your host, I am on Twitter @thefatperlo.